Hello everyone, Jamie from Not Quite Hollywood here. This week's going to be a little different. We took the first topic and decided to break it out into its own mini episode because it ended up being about 45 minutes long. When we recorded, it was near the end of July, and we were just pondering if there was anything good out so far. It's been a pretty slow year, so this was initially a topic on last episode, but it was so long we decided to branch it out on its own because we don't have the traditional two episodes this week. So we hope you enjoy it. If you have any other suggestions for good movies maybe we didn't talk about, maybe we didn't see yet, maybe you have differing opinions on some of the films we talk about. I mean, honestly, let us know. I mean, our comments are always ready to be answered on our Facebook page, Not Quite Hollywood. Also, we'd love to know what you are looking forward to this year. I mean, is it Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them? A Monster Calls? I mean, there are a lot of films coming out for the rest of the year that could be very exciting. You know, email us. We are notquitepod@gmail.com. And enjoy this episode. So we've talked about this before here. Brandon and I also do We Need Movies. We talked about it there as well. But this year's been kind of shitty for film. 2016 so far in theatrical releases. I mean, there's been some gems we've seen that are, you know, released limited in DVD or whatever have you. But 2016's pretty rough overall.
I'm gonna have to disagree.
Okay, well, we're gonna do that because we're gonna say our like top few. I'd say top three if you have them. Films released in theaters this year, so far. I
didn't research this yet.
John's probably only watched three movies in the theaters this year, but
so they have to be movies that we saw in theaters or movies that came out theatrically this year that we've caught, because we're now at the halfway point past July. So I've seen a few that have come out in theaters. I didn't get a chance to catch them in theaters, but they were released in 2016 theatrically. You know what
that's
I'm saying?
Fine. No, okay. I get that.
Good. Okay, yeah, that works.
Okay,
yeah. Good.
That
good.
Works too.
Yeah. Because yeah, man, as you were saying this, there's a shocking few amount of movies that I saw in theaters that I really dug. One of them, one that I wouldn't expect to really put in my top 10 list, but I know it's going to make it, was The Jungle Book. I fucking love this movie.
That was going to be my number one.
Yeah.
The Jungle Book, I loved it too.
I did. It was fantastic. Good. Great visuals. It just was a fun movie that I could, you know, shut your brain off to, but you enjoyed the characters. And yeah, one of the few movies that visually on screen blew me away. I haven't been that kind of swept away visually in a movie in a very long time.
And the fact that we talked about it before in a podcast, but it didn't pull any punches. Like, I was getting sick and tired of Disney's, like, the Frozen shit and all that stuff, where it's like, the villain is just kind of a guy, and but Idris Elba,
he's terrifying.
He's fucking terrifying. And when he killed the leader of the wolf clan, I was just fuck, he killed people.
Yeah.
Or someone, or a thing.
Creatures, yeah,
a creature.
Whatever.
A living being.
A living being. And there was no, like, question about it.
No.
I was just like, wow, Disney's going back to, like, its darker.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Talk about revisiting a property that honestly improved upon the material of the 1967, is it really?
Yeah.
That old animated classic. And they were able to incorporate the music, but not in an annoying, cloying way that like bothered you. It was very modern, but also kind of stuck to those sensibilities of what you'd expect from a Jungle Book movie. And in my opinion, one of the best versions of a remake. It's a really good attempt at kind of bringing that material back to the public and doing it in a new, interesting way.
Well, I mean, you see a lot of remakes nowadays. Obviously, that's the way of the world. But we talked about last episode with Shout Factory, how they take really good care of these franchises. That's the same thing that this, what Disney did, believe it or not, with their own franchise. They really took this story by Rudyard Kipling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Rudyard Kipling.
And took it, that plus mixed with, you know, there's more of the book in there, but it's still a lot of a remake of that cartoon. And did it right. They didn't rush it. It was announced like 3-4 years ago before it ever came out.
Sure.
Well, I had no faith in it.
Me neither.
Same. At all.
Anyone.
And it got really good reviews. And even when I see good reviews, I tend to like, eh. But sure. I loved the animated version when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So I went out and saw it, and I was blown away. Like, Christopher Walken.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's King Louie?
It's King Louie. Amazing. It was one of the best things I've ever seen on film.
And coming off of...
And I hate CG.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah. And it was done so well. And coming off of the movies like Maleficent and Cinderella, that were these rehashes of those famous... I had no expectations going in. And it really, really surprised me. It was a good family film. So I would say that's probably one of my highlights of theatrical.
Sure.
I enjoyed Deadpool. I wouldn't put it in my top, but it was an enjoyable comic.
Yeah, okay. Same here. I enjoyed
it. It was refreshing to see in February.
Yeah. I actually saw it twice.
Yeah. Nice. No, it's an entertaining movie, for sure.
So would you say, like, top three?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be formal, but I mean, whatever stands out.
The three stand out.
Yeah.
Do you want to go around and do one each at a time?
Or? Sure.
Okay.
I mean, you guys both took Jungle Book?
Yeah, I mean,
well, I took Jungle Book.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That was going to be on my list, but I'm going to bring up The Nice Guys.
Yes.
Okay.
Holy shit.
Man. And I love The Nice Guys so much, and I'm so sad that it just didn't hit that box office mark. But holy fuck. You know, like a 70s themed buddy
cop
detective movie was exactly what I needed. Like, it was just it was so refreshing to see that.
A little too much heart. A little bit, but it hit that vibe and it did it well. And I mean, it has still some really great memorable scenes, like the protest scene is fucking
awesome. Oh, this is some great
stuff. Supposed to be dead.
One of the best scenes of the year.
Yeah, their chemistry. And honestly, I would say out of the summer releases from major studios, it's my favorite summer release so far. Yeah. Absolutely.
When Jamie had told me this was going to be the topic, I had to scramble and be like, all right, what movies did I see? And the list started out really different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had Warcraft and Batman versus Superman. So I was like, this year has sucked. But after doing a little research, I found out that several of my favorite movies I'd seen this year fit within the category that had theatrical release during this year.
Sure.
In U.S.
A couple technicalities, a couple films were released in U.S. this year, so.
So, the first one, Neon Demon.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to see this.
I think it's going to be a little bit later until it's on Amazon.
I'm sure.
Sure.
Yeah. What could show up at, like, the Bucksport Theater or somewhere?
Maybe, yeah.
That would
keep an eye on it.
Definitely. I mean, if you like Nicholas Winding Refn's other films, like, especially Only God Forgives, if you like that one, Neon Demon is awesome. It's beautiful. It's light on story. I mean, some people complain about the metaphors. They're like, oh, they're too in your face or whatever. And it kind of sucks that we come to that point where metaphors have to be hidden.
Yeah.
Because if it's not hidden, then it seemed like, oh, this is simplified trash and yada, yada, yada. But, I mean, if the metaphor has an interesting meaning behind it, put it on the surface as much as you want. But, that's one of my favorites that I've seen this year.
Like, so far, my number one film of the year. I mean, it's early. It's only July. Sure. But Swiss Army Man. Mm. I didn't expect to like it as much.
Did you see it, Brandon?
I did see it. I didn't have the same reaction. I thought it was trying too hard to be offbeat and weird and colorful and original. And while I admire it for being different and for trying new things, and there are moments and scenes in it that are really, really good, and the performances are great, but as a whole, as a movie, I got done, and I felt so distant, I didn't really connect with anybody, I don't know, I think it was just one of those movies that was trying too hard to be an indie darling, and it just came across as kind of pretentious and...
So if you got that slight feeling while watching the trailer...
Yeah,
Going to be like...
And again, you can recognize there's talent in here, these guys are talented, everyone involved in it is good, and it looks good, it's a well-made movie by all respects, but when I left the theater, I just felt like it was really just trying too hard to be different, and it didn't strike that tone naturally.
I definitely still want to see it because Paul Dano.
You should definitely see it. That's the thing. I'll watch it again because I do want to see kind of maybe my interpretation of it will change. But
I get that. That's a valid argument. There's nothing wrong with that at all. I think in ways they are trying way too hard to be indie. Like there's like tropes that indie films have that this is like fucking like
checks
hitting over the head.
Oh, yeah. One of them. Yeah.
Got it.
But
Arcade Fire song.
Was there?
No, I don't know, but I'm just saying.
I don't know them that well.
It's a fucking indie movie right there.
If my theory is true, though, about... I don't want to go into the spoilers. If my theory is true about the film, there's another level that has not been explored yet.
Yeah, when you told me your theory, I kind of actually was more interested in watching it again.
Right.
I like what people can take away from it.
Yeah, it didn't resonate with me because I'm not that kind of person that theory, my theory is based on. But... wow, I could see it knowing a lot of people like that. Super vague. I don't want to get into it.
Write down this theory of yours.
It's on my blog, honestly. It's there. Okay. So when you see it, read it and let me know. Yeah, the performances really like sell the movie. Paul Dano and Daniel Radcliffe. Like, I love how Daniel Radcliffe and a lot of other Disney or young kid film actors have done after. Mm-hmm. They go against typecast. They go fucking left field, you know, like Daniel Radcliffe's like, I'm gonna show my dick up with a horse on fucking sure, play.
Everybody tries to get out of it. Yeah.
And it worked for him. Films? I don't know. I didn't watch it.
Oh, okay.
It's a play. how am I supposed to see his dick?
Well, I don't because, you know, maybe they had photos.
Dicks or something, yeah.
Sure, I guess. Someone probably sure took some. But I mean, like, I appreciate that because, like, you know, there are a lot of kid actors in the 90s and before 80s that we, Corey Feldman, like, you kind of, like, saw them get typecast in a certain role.
Yeah.
And I appreciate him branching out and trying these different things. And this movie's, again, one of the years I've never said this thing before. I've never seen a film like this before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that. I appreciate as much as we give shit to each other, I appreciate you giving me these films because I like seeing films I've never seen before. It gives me hope that there's still something out there that hasn't been told.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Or in that way.
I had that indie, like, okay, this is a generic indie film
sure.
feeling about it. And then I saw Paul Dano riding Daniel Radcliffe as a jet ski, yeah. and I was like, okay, I'm sold.
I'm like, there's nothing I gotta see generic that. Really about it. It just hits people differently. That's cool. Another movie that I would bring up is one of my favorites so far this year. A movie I didn't catch in theaters, but I did catch when it was released on home video. And that was Green Room. I love this movie. It starts by the same guy who did Blue Ruin. And it's just, we talk about metaphors and hiding things. This movie is 100% everything straight to the point, bare bones, just a white-knuckle thriller set in one location about a punk band who's playing for these neo-Nazis. They don't really realize how dangerous these people are. They stumble upon a murder, and they are then thrust into the situation that they got to get out of. Patrick Stewart, fantastic villain, very calm, cool, and collected. Takes that Christoph Waltz role that he's been doing for the past 8 movies and really makes it his own. Like, he really brings something new to that tense, quiet intimidation. Mm-hmm. Anton Yelchin, RIP, who recently passed. He's great in the movie. It really makes you miss, like, what he could have done with his life.
Oh, yeah.
While it may be to the numbers where you can kind of maybe predict where it's going to go, it's tough to watch, man. The practical effects, especially when we're talking about those hardcore gore scenes, like, when you talk about realistic violence portrayed in movies, they don't glorify it. They don't try to make it look cool. It's as if you're thrust into the situation, you don't want to be there, and you have to fight your way out. It's terrible.
It's when you're disturbed by it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're disturbed.
You can go to certain films, like action films and stuff, and cheer on
the action. Yeah, that's fun too. Yeah.
But there's some films that, when they hit just the right note, you don't like it. You're uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Bone Tomahawk.
Bone Tomahawk.
That's what, we were just talking about that.
The film I'll be talking, my next round, Lobster.
But
no, I really want to see Green Room. Probably can't tell from my appearance, but huge punk fan. I saw one of the characters are wearing a shirt and has the Dead Kennedys like logo on it, and apparently they sing Nazi punks fuck off.
Yes,
and I'm just
two Nazi punks. It's a great there's a great scene too where without really explaining too much how they get people to mosh. It's very funny. They start off with a certain song and people aren't feeling it, and then they go into another song and it's very slow. They cut out all the music and then people start to feel it, and then it's just people smashing into each other. It's a great
connection
with your audience.
Have you been in a mosh pit?
Yeah, it's so cool. I've been right there front stage, and it's like when it gets to the first song, everyone's kind of like warming up, and then like by the third song until the end of the set, just fucking constant. Yeah, awesome.
I get elbowed in the throat. I did at a Flog and Molly concert.
That's awesome.
And when the guy hit me, I kind of shoved him.
Yeah.
And he fell down, and people started kicking him.
Oh, shit. That guy died.
He almost died. But I was just like, and I pushed him.
Yeah, that's awesome. But Jeremy Saulnier, the director of it, he was into the punk rock band. And what's funny is after his first movie, Blue Ruin, was a small success, but he got a lot of indie cred, and they were like, you can kind of do whatever you want. And he decided that he wanted to do this movie that he knew would never get made if he didn't do it that moment. And so he put it all against it, and he was just like, I just want to make this, like, really hardcore, violent, neo-noir. a Nazi punk rock band movie. It's cool. It's very different than things you've seen before, but a well-made thriller.
I was going to say, based on what you said, I mean, yes, by the numbers in a way, but it sounds like something I've never seen before. Like, sure. The concept.
I love the setting is really cool. The location's great, and they make the most of it, man. It's a low-budget movie, but really good effects and good performances.
Mm-hmm. I've seen Blue Ruin.
Yes.
Didn't care for it.
It's better than that movie.
Okay.
He learned from that movie. Yeah, he learned from that movie. It's not as slow, and the characters don't make as stupid of decisions. But I liked in Blue Ruin the fact that, you know, they're all normal people. It's not like this badass CIA guy. It's this guy who's just thrown into a situation. You have to deal with it. I like that about this movie more so than Blue Ruin.
I gotta check it out too. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
My second pick.
Have you watched this second movie in theaters?
Oh yeah, I know what it is.
Can I guess?
Yep.
Conjuring 2.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Conjuring 2.
Yep.
I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I am not a big fan of modern horror films or scary movies or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're doing an excellent job with this franchise, and I think they can continue. I like the fact that it's based on two real people.
Mm-hmm.
They hit the atmosphere, the style, the clothing, of everything that's in those time periods, they nail.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And this was, what, is it 70s or 80s?
I think it's late 70s.
Late 70s. Because Amityville was based off of it.
And I know last time we talked about Conjuring 2, I didn't do any spoilers, but I think it's far enough along.
Sure.
I'll talk about things that I really enjoyed.
I still haven't seen it. No, I'm kidding.
I won't say it.
I haven't seen it.
And it's not even a giant spoiler. It's just like what the entity was that was haunting the family. And it takes two disguises in the film. And it takes the disguise of an old man, and then it takes this disguise of one of my favorite legends in horror that everyone... It's kind of like the Mothman or whatever, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And it's the Crooked Man.
Yes.
And when I watched this film and I saw how it moved around and how they filmed it, I thought... it's CG, but it wasn't. It's actually practical. There's a guy who actually in the suit, and they just do clever editing and shit to make him look, and it is terrifying.
Can you explain to me like how he moves? Like
he's just all like lanky, very slender, Slender Man like.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
He's like Crooked Man is the original Slender Man.
Sure,
is what he is.
Yeah.
Okay, it follows, and there's that scene where there's like that really tall guy that peers
behind. Oh, it's better than that.
He's lankier than that.
Okay. And he's like broken, and like he's bent over.
Almost like a ventriloquist dump. Almost like it's like puppeteer type.
Jump cut editing kind of. Because the way he moves is really jagged.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's interesting is I actually didn't know that was based on a legend until I heard you guys' podcast, and then I looked into it. It was actually really funny. No, I love that was my favorite part of that movie, is the Crooked Man. And a lot of people didn't like it. They thought it was like almost seemed like it was a different movie, and I love that part.
Well, it's funny, because the people that had criticized said, like, oh, it's too out there. I'm like, actually, that's the one character that's based on the supposed real character, you know, or real legend. My only gripe, again, those who have seen it, is that supposedly the other entity kind of took it as a personality, which I was kind of like, maybe they shouldn't have. Maybe it would have been neat to see two legends kind of like face off briefly.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been neat.
Yeah.
You know, but so yeah, Conjuring 2, I think it's got a, and there's going to be a third.
Oh,
it was successful,
I'm
totally behind seeing a third.
Okay, you said you wanted those like two entities to be separate or whatever.
Yeah.
So we see this first one that they think they're going after, and they're seeing like it's a huge ass challenge to them.
Yeah.
And then the second one comes in, the Crooked Man, and then he just straight up fucking murders the first one.
Well,
and
I wanted to see a
bigger problem.
I know, I wanted to see if there would be a confrontation between the two, because the way the storyline plays out didn't really make sense that this one demon's actually haunting the main characters, but somehow went across the world to England to possess, to harass a family and draw them there.
Yeah.
But it would have been cool if that demon that was following, what were the names again?
Ed and Lorraine. The Warrens.
If that demon that was following the Warrens went with them to go confront the Crooked Man.
Still gets to the same place.
Yeah, and then see a confrontation to see. That would have been amazing.
Yeah, they pull like a Bane Dark Knight Rises at the end where someone else is controlling it all. Yeah. Like, what? Well, but still good. No, great movie. James Wan is a fan, is probably one of the best horror movie directors working today. He really understands the genre. And that's the thing, is even though they employ these things that we've become used to in the genre, the jump scares, they're not for nothing. It's not those goddamn movies where there's a loud bang and you turn and there's nothing there. They don't try to fake you out with anything.
Well, we talked about
or it's a friend that scares them. Be like,
no, because when it's a jump scare, it's a jump scare. Yeah. It's like, fuck, something happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something real happened. And it also played on the fact that I enjoyed the idea of maybe the family's faking.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah,
that
maybe it's all bullshit, you know, and they played up on that angle a little bit, which is cool because you don't see that I mean, you see in reality when people say it and claim
ghost
it.
Hunters.
Ghost hunters and shit, yeah.
Ghost punchers?
Ghost punchers. Which we made fun of. So yeah, that's basically my second.
Okay.
Actually, that would be my third because I picked Jungle Book too.
Yeah.
My second choice is going to be The Lobster.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this movie actually hadn't released this year, but
it did release this year. The U.S. release was this year. Yeah.
Just like, I have never laughed in a theater more than this fucking movie.
Really?
In a really long time.
John C. Reilly.
I love the cast, and I've been very interested to see this movie. It comes out next week on Blu-ray, so I'll definitely.
I know. I finally watched the trailer. Yeah.
I think I know what I'm spending $25
on.
I'm buying it right away because, man, it's amazing dark humor, very beautiful, comfy cinematography that's going on with the subject matter that's very oppressive and depressing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so it's very contradicting throughout this whole entire movie, being like, oh, this is really cozy hotel, but what it's based around is really fucked up. Just because you're single, you're only good at being an animal.
Yeah, it's a great concept.
Like, damn. And it's just like its world building and how it presents the information. It's like, it's not in your face of just being like, you are at this hotel because you're single and now you have to be an animal. No, you just go through like the little interview process as someone who would be going through it.
Yeah.
It's like speed dating with a gun to your head.
I love that they take...
Except for you can add time.
Sure.
They don't necessarily take a genre like a sci-fi or a horror. They take the romantic, like, drama genre, and then they put this crazy spin. That's what's cool about it to me. It's a genre that's always flooded with the same bullshit. To get something so cool.
One of my favorite endings of a film this year. That's why I'm excited for you to watch this.
Yeah, I remember Jamie talking about the ending, and yeah, okay.
Oh, wait,
very divisive.
Listen to that.
No, I don't know what happens yet.
Okay, it's a divisive ending. I can't remember if we spoiled that. But yeah, Lobster, it's coming out on DVD next week, or Blu-ray next week.
Yeah.
That's going to date this podcast. So it's already out.
It came out this week.
Yeah, it came out this week. Rent it. It's probably... Oh, I don't even know if it...
Redbox wouldn't have that.
No, Redbox wouldn't.
You can rent it on, like, Vudu or Amazon or something like that. iTunes.
Straight up worth a watch.
Yeah. My second one, I don't want to talk about it that much because, honestly, it's a really good film. I saw it in April, I believe. It was Demolition. Jake Gyllenhaal has been doing really consistent work the past couple of years.
Except for Southpaw.
I haven't seen that.
He's the best part of the movie.
Apparently it wasn't him as the Lone Star movie. Yeah. Was.
But like, his work in Nightcrawler blew me away. Yeah. I really enjoyed that. And Demolition's about a guy who he loses his fiance, and then his entire world, he kind of just like mentally checked out in this relationship, right? He didn't want this. He didn't really give a shit about her, and he found her pretty annoying. And then once she dies, he's free. And he has to like pretend he cared about her, like with her parents, played by Chris Cooper as the father.
Yeah,
I love Chris Cooper. And Jake Gyllenhaal has to like kind of go through the motions, and he meets Naomi Watts like through this weird like letter exchange. And in time she died, he's like writing a letter during her funeral at her father's house to the vending machine operator at the hospital because that didn't give him his snack. So like his relationship with this woman who he's corresponding with at this bizarre little company is just it's so really weird, and it's about him accepting loss and finding himself. So he starts breaking shit as a way to like kind of vent his emotions.
Which is like that line that pops up in there, and like I think even Jake Gyllenhaal's character says it, where it's like if you want to fix something, you have to take it all completely apart.
You have
apart.
To kind of like see how it works. Yeah,
I like that idea.
So it's a really concept. Like indie like film, and you know it's a character study, and it's really well done. It won't get him an Oscar nomination or anything, but it's something that I would recommend. Mm-hmm. Just because it's a different type of film in today's landscape.
Yeah, now this is the guy who did Dallas Buyers Club and Wild. Same guy.
Correct.
Jean-Marc something. Gyllenhaal's between that and like Prisoners, he's had a lot of great roles lately.
Enemy,
also really good.
I haven't seen that, but I've seen Prisoners.
Southpaw was the movie was very by the number and generic, but he's good in it. So cool. All right, I'll definitely check that out. A movie that I would, if we're only going off of three, I guess there would probably be another couple movies that I would mention. Sing Street was really cool. I liked Sing Street. It's directed by the guy who did Once and Begin Again. Not two movies I really didn't want to see at all. They're kind of musically centered romantic dramedies, but this is about a kid who just builds a band in order to impress a girl. It's set in 1980s Dublin, Ireland during the recession, and so John, all these families are breaking up and
John leaving. The Irishman.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's great. It's a great set. It's a great setting, great time, and I really dug that one. But if I'm going to three, I dug The Witch, but I liked Everybody Wants Some the most. I think that's the movie that I would pick out to be my number three. It's technically the spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused. Richard Linklater wrote it right after he wrote Dazed and Confused. Didn't get the money for it, and then after the success of Boyhood, he was able to finally make it. Same script. It's very similar to Dazed and Confused, almost to the same shots, opening shots coming down on a charger entering. It's just about a guy who's rooming with some baseball players and the 3 days before college begins, and kind of him navigating the world of this 1980s college landscape, going to different parties and meeting different people. It's very simple. But you really care for the characters. It's a great drinking party movie. You can just sit around and enjoy it with your friends. If you like Dazed and Confused, it's not as good a movie or as, I guess, relatable maybe as that movie is. Timeless. But it's great. It's got a good cast of almost no-name actors who I think will really go on to do some good stuff. They're talented people and a great 80s rock soundtrack and a great setting, great time. Just a fun movie. A movie that I won't put, it's not an Oscar movie or anything like that, but it's a great just movie to revisit. I can definitely see myself revisiting this every couple summers. It's a good summer fun movie.
Would you recommend it to someone whose first film was Boyhood and they absolutely hated it?
Oh gosh, yeah. I mean, if you don't like Boyhood, which I could get, this is classic what Linklater's about. Like, I feel like Linklater's about that slacker, Dazed and Confused, those type of movies. He tried Boyhood and he did the Before trilogy, and that's awesome. Yep. Like, he's really evolved as a filmmaker since Dazed and Confused. So it's interesting to see him take that concept of just a high school movie and adapt it to college. But it's a good party movie. I understand it's not nearly as heavy or as pretentious as Boyhood. And Boyhood is more about, you know, the gimmick of it lasting 12 years. You know what I mean? As a movie itself, it's a little hard to get through.
And it's not as long, is it?
Oh, God, no. It's an hour 45 minutes. It's a normal, regular, you know.
I think I could handle it.
I was going to say, no. It's a fun, entertaining movie. I was entertained start to finish. So,
like, I haven't seen Dazed and Confused. So, like, I feel like, you know, maybe if one day I have a lot of extra time,
definitely
just be like, Dazed and Confused, then watch Everybody Wants
Some. I would almost recommend watching Everybody Wants Some first.
Maybe. No, I know what you mean.
Because Dazed and Confused is such a classic, and a lot of reviewers were down on this film because it was like, it's not as good as Dazed and Confused. Like, even if it had, like, its flaws, then, like you said, Linklater got better as a filmmaker. But, I mean, seeing that one first as a modern-day film, then going back to the classic would probably be a better way to go.
I also feel like a lot of the novelty of Dazed and Confused comes from knowing all these actors at such a young... You see Matthew McConaughey, Ben Affleck, all these people that are now famous, you know, back then acting. This movie doesn't have that, so it doesn't have that 20-year retrospect that you can look back on and be like, oh, all these people are famous now. But it's just a movie. I don't think there's been a more entertaining where I was like, this is fun. I will watch this again. It's fun.
It's a good movie. My thing with Richard Linklater... he puts out movies that piss me the fuck off, but then he puts out movies that I generally love.
Mm-hmm.
And The Wake in Life, is one of my favorite movies.
Yep,
it's one of the most interesting movies I've ever seen, and it's by the guy who did Boyhood. So it's like
Scanner Darkly.
You know what? I completely forgot. I just now realized that I had seen a Scanner Darkly, and I was like, fuck, that is on the blog.
That's a weird, fun movie.
So he's got, I mean, to give him credit, he's got range in what he does. A lot of range.
I mean, he has very interesting ideas. The idea behind Boyhood. Fucking great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pulling it off, I was just like...
Yeah, and a lot of that had to do with the guy just grew up to be like a chody. But I mean, that's a risk you take when you take on such an undertaking of 12 years. I gotta cast this fucking kid. Like, who knows what he's gonna be like, so...
daughter.
It seemed like his race changed.
I don't know what happened.
In that movie.
He was very...
No, he like turned out... When he grew up, I thought he was gonna be like... Like the typical white kid.
Right,
It was like blonde hair. But then he kind of had like a Mediterranean look about him. And I was just like...
That's what it's about. The changing American landscape.
The melting pot of America. That's right. Changes a child's nationality. Over 12 years. John.
Yeah, your third movie, John.
My third. I wasn't even going to bring it up, because this is actually technically my fourth, because I went with Jungle Book.
Sure.
Oh, okay.
But I'm going to go with The Witch.
I almost mentioned that. I did like it a lot.
It's not for the typical moviegoer. It's not for somebody who's in there like, I want to watch a straight-up horror film.
Mm-mm.
Go see Conjuring 2. Because The Witch, the reason I love The Witch was, I brought it up in a podcast before, I studied mythology and legends and all that stuff when I was in college. And to see like an accurate depiction of the fear that a witch can instill in people was amazing to see it on film.
Oh,
because
yeah.
A witch isn't a cartoon, you know what I mean, with a big cauldron and a broomstick, even though in The Witch, that's where the legends came from, actually having the broomstick. But you have to, like, sacrifice a kid and then masturbate with it.
Yeah, they're killing fucking kids.
Yeah. Because witches were... If you thought back then a witch was in your area, that meant it was a force of nature that would just ruin and corrupt everything in the area.
Mm-hmm. Crops die.
And how do you think...
Your goat milks blood.
Yes.
Like...
That's how fucking burning people at the stake. How extreme the fear that you have to burn people at the stake. And he nailed it. I felt like he nailed how terrifying the idea of a witch was. So it kind of it took away from the cartoon aspect of what we think of a witch and the Halloween costumes and shit.
Yeah.
And brought it back to like, this is what it was actually about.
Well, and you saw a different side of that mythology.
Yeah.
Like, you never see how a woman turns into a witch. And then you see how the character, Thomasin. And you see her, like, go along this journey of she's being accused of being the witch, and then her whole entire family dies, and she's left by herself. She has no means of living.
Yeah.
And then Satan comes up and be like, do you want the taste of butter?
It's so...
Do you want to live deliciously?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, fuck, I don't got anything else to do, sure.
Leaving the person in a situation where it's like, I've been separated, I've been isolated, my family's gone, all this stuff. Yeah, I guess I have no choice.
Yeah.
It's so richly detailed, and it's set in, what, the 1630s or something crazy shit? Like a time period that's never shown in film, let alone horror movies. But,
I remember,
it's strange because I like seeing certain horror movies with a crowd because I like the energy that you can feed off. I love that. But seeing a movie like this... Or even movie, not as good, but another movie like it, kind of, It Follows.
Yeah.
When you have one of those horror movies that subvert the genre, and it's not quite what the typical horror mainstream audio.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I hated that experience because everyone's leaving there going, oh, that sucked, this
that
bullshit.
Was
like
the same experience.
You guys don't fucking get it. Like, you're just looking for jump scares, and it pisses me off. Like, the whole, that's why my topic, when we get into it, will kind of about that.
Like, when I watched it, and then people that I know that love horror films asked me about it, I said, I loved it. I loved what it did. I loved the whole mythology of it. I loved everything. You won't like it.
Yeah.
That's basically what
it's
it was.
Sad to say.
Yeah. And people still went and saw it and told me, I didn't really like it. I'm like, well, I didn't think you would.
No.
Yeah.
Didn't.
No.
It's a different level of horror.
It's way it's building atmosphere as well. I mean, it took shots of the woods, overlaid some music on it, and I was creeped the fuck out.
Yeah, no, it's tense.
And that was
it.
It was shots of woods.
But people get bored by that. It's
and they're like, what's creepy about that?
Yeah, I want a loud sound and I want to be startling. Like,
where's the guy with the machete?
Exactly.
You know. Ooh, a cat!
Yeah. But yeah, The Witch. That as if the movie's released this year, I'd say it's the best period film we've gotten this year so far.
Yes.
It's a great depiction of that.
It's like the dialogue. Like, it's just...
Exactly. Half of it you can't understand, but I don't want them to dumb it down. I'm like, I love the fact that you're doing this as to the T you can.
And a little side note that was funny. I was at Bull Moose, which is an awesome store for...
Oh, I love it.
Pay us.
Yeah,
I'm going to put flyers up on your boards.
There was a couple there, and they were looking for The Witch. And which is funny, because the way it's spelled, it's two V's together.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they were in the W section, looking for The Witch, and they're like, I guess it's not here, it's not out. And I was just like, it's down here a little bit.
It's the V.
Yeah, they put it under the V section.
I'm surprised. Okay, I feel like they did that just to fuck with people.
I think so. It was awesome because they were about to walk out, and I'm like, no, it's right here. And they're like, oh, thank you.
Nice.
And then they came back,
and
they saw you in the store, and they're like,
fuck you.
Why did you
watch that?
It also does things that, I mean, like, especially with horror movie productions, you don't want to go with kids or with animals because they're both the hardest to control.
Yeah.
What they do with their kid performances and Black Phillip, that whole fucking shit, dude, that's creepy. That's just really creepy. Off
those two younger kids.
Those twins?
Yeah. So good. Yeah, really unsettling.
Creepiest. Yeah. Like, you think that they are part of Satan's army, and it's just like, the fuck?
Timing.
Jamie just, like, turned on the light on all
of
this.
Don't explain it.
Holy
So yeah, guys, the last two.
My
hurry up. I'm just kidding.
We're having great conversations. Yeah. Fuck time constraints. Yeah. We're having great conversations.
Keep going.
My number one movie.
Ooh.
Knight of Cups.
Okay.
By Terrence Malick. It is now on Blu-ray.
Ooh.
I have bought the Blu-ray. I have not watched it again yet. It's one of those movies, like, I have to find the perfect time. I have to get in that right mindset and be like, I'm ready to find something.
That's a lot deep. Of the Terrence Malick stuff. The last, I mean, Tree of Life, it took me, I think, 2 or 3 times to finally
finish it.
Yeah, no, to finish, like, to believe, all right, I'm going to watch this.
This is my first introduction to Terrence Malick.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, that's interesting.
And that visual poetry that he does within his movies,
yeah.
I mean, like, I can see where people find it really boring. Mm-hmm. Because, like, mm-hmm. very scarce dialogue. Definitely in Knight of Cups. I'm not sure about Tree of Life and Thin Red Line.
I was going to say, those are the only... That one, and I also saw The New World with Colin Farrell. I haven't seen any other Terrence Malick
stuff. Did they have, like, a lot of dialogue in it?
No, it's all... It's almost all visual. Very, very... It's always very sparse dialogue.
Okay, good. Because I like that style. Because, like, it makes you focus on the images.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And you have to watch the actors and, like... I kind of feel sorry for any actors that are in this movie. Because it's just putting the full force on, like, look at their face... Look at their body movements, and that's where you have to derive the story from and get the understanding from it. Mm-hmm. And I just love the whole premise of Knight of Cups is that with a lot of people, what I've read about their problems with his movies is that they get, like, lost and they get confused. Knight of Cups is, like, that's your protagonist. Is he's just fucking lost and confused.
Now, it takes place in Hollywood, right? It's kind
yes.
of set around the Hollywood world.
And I've recently caught, like, a little bit of an interview with, like, Christian Bale. And a few of the producers and Natalie Portman. And he talks about how, and it kind of gave me like a little bit of better understanding, is that Christian Bale's character, he is someone who has like risen above. Like he's gotten to the top. He's gotten to the elite. Like he's a writer. So he's written some like movies that have made like millions or billions of dollars. But he doesn't feel satisfied.
Mm.
He still feels lost. And I mean, that's like a lot of people I feel they're like, okay, yeah, I want to make a bunch of money. I'll be rich. I'll be fulfilled. And then they, you know, it takes that idea and be like, you get to that point and you're just like, well, how do I get the fulfilling if I'm at the top of the game? And just like him using that visual poetry and something like going into the second viewing is I want to read up on tarot cards because Knight of Cups is a tarot card.
Okay.
Oh.
And that's where it derives from. And that it's like, it's sectioned and it'll like pop up and it'll be like death or temperance. Which are also tarot cards. And so with tarot cards, they interact with each other. Certain cards interact with other cards in a different way. And also, like, if they're upside down and there's, like, a few lines of dialogue, like, his father tells Christian Bale, you're upside down and you need to be turned upright. And so, like, it makes you want to think and, like, research this topic that before you just be like, oh, tarot cards, that's hokey pokey. Who I'm not going to bother with that shit. And so that's why it's just, like, one of my top films of this year. Just the main theme, also, it's pretty much kind of like House, where that's, like, that's what the majority of the theme is, and there's, like, a lot of variation on it, but just, like, it has this medieval sound to it, but you're in modern California.
Mm-hmm.
And just that contrast, and it's a beautiful theme. And that is my number one film this year. And it saved me from thinking that this year was absolute shit.
Yeah.
Because beyond these, I would agree that this year has not been...
It's just been lacking in those bigger movies. Like, those big...
Yeah.
We've had fucking just week after week of these big movies, but they're not good. They're just, like, really...
Nothing that's pulled me into the theater.
No, it's sad. It's really weird, too.
X-Men Apocalypse released this year.
I could give
it that. Never even win.
I was talking with someone the other day, and I was just like, you know, we were going through like all the blockbusters, and they're like, X-Men Apocalypse. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right.
No, exactly.
That released this
year. They're
so
forgetful.
Like, whoa.
A lot of them are so forgetful. So generic.
My favorite film of the year so far.
Yeah,
I know what this is.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's one August, Brandon and I all watched together, Midnight Special.
Not Captain America?
No,
Captain
as
America.
Much as August leads into thinking I love Captain America.
What's your first communal movie? So I figured
you
that
guys
be...
forced that on me. I'll fight that to the day. Because we all watched it, happened to watch it. Like, oh, fuck, Miles will make a Jamie's communal movie.
I was like, fuck it, I gotta go to the theater and watch Captain America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just lying to fit in.
So Midnight Special is a small, low-budget sci-fi film. First Hollywood production for Jeff Nichols. Jeff Nichols, if you didn't know, did Shotgun Stories with Michael Shannon. And then, of course, went into Take Shelter, Mud, and now Midnight Special. And all he works with Michael Shannon on every film. And this movie is the kind of... I told you the guys this when we watched it in April. This movie is the kind of movie I'd love to make. Like the low-budget sci-fi film that doesn't have to hit you over the head with exposition. It gives you what you need, or sometimes not even the entire picture right at first. Like, it kind of leaves you some questions as you're watching it, and they slowly unfold, and there's a lot of it up to interpretation. A lot of cool actors involved. Of course, Michael Shannon, Joel Edgerton, Adam Driver. I mean,
Kirsten Dunst.
I mean, one of her best.
The kid wasn't bad either.
No, the kid's really good. What's his name?
The kid from St. Vincent. I don't know his
name. St. Vincent, yes. Fuck him.
Yeah. Sam Shepard.
Okay. He was like the leader of the group.
But it's a cool idea, and it's done in a way, like I said, that doesn't have to hit you over the head with it. So I appreciate the kind of film. And it's not going to win a lot of awards. I don't care. I mean, like, it was my favorite film so far this year, and I'm waiting to see what usurps it, if anything. But I know John has not yet seen it.
Nope, I haven't.
But I would recommend it for you because it's something that it feels like a movie out of the 80s and, you know, where like in 70s where it doesn't have to...
From what I saw from the trailer, it reminded me a lot of, like, Firestarter.
Yeah.
Stephen King.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah. I enjoyed the movie a lot. I picked it up on Blu-ray, but it's one of those movies that no matter what the ending was, it would not have satisfied my expectations. The whole movie keeps bringing up these really interesting questions just about humanity and our interactions with if there was this other, you know, being or from an alien, whatever he is. And they do explain it at the end. It's just one of those movies that you keep building up. It's so well done in its mystery and it's setting up and unraveling that box. And then once it's finally unraveled, you're like, well, okay.
And see, that's the only problem I have with that movie. Yeah. It's just like that reveal. I'm just kind of like,
it's fine. It's okay. Good. Yeah. And it's not bad filmmaking at all. It's a really well made film, really well acted film. It's just one of those movies that it's kind of almost that J.J. Abrams thing where no matter what they set up at the end, it's not going to fulfill what I have going into it.
Well, it's very novelistic in that way. When people complain about adaptations of their favorite books, I mean, their interpretation of that book is not going to be what that film ends up being.
Yes.
So this is like very similar in that you're in your head, you're plotting this film and how is it going to play out. And even if you don't have a definitive finish to this film in your head, it's still not what you expected. So it's like, I get that. You know, I get that there's some kind of like disconnect there. But after a while, I think it'll be a cult classic.
Like, it could be. The idea of what the other place was.
Sure, what it means. Yeah.
But I think it would be interesting if they would have done, like, another Earth kind of scenario where it's, like, a different planet above and it's, like, upside down and then would have been, like,
yeah.
But just, like, how it just...
It's a little Tomorrowland-y, like, and it's in its execution at the end.
But I do love that beginning when they're driving down the road.
Yeah,
and he just, like, puts on the night vision goggles and shuts off the headlights. It's like...
Yeah, it's like an on-the-run film for most of it, you know. Yeah, good. But anyway, that was the first topic. Believe it or not.
46 minutes in the first
topic.
Holy
shit.
Thank God no one brought up 10 Cloverfield Lane. That's all I'm going to say.
That was, what, best of 2016? So far.
Apparently not as bad as we thought.
So far, no.
I was going to say, there's been a lot of good independent smaller films.
Sure.
I'd just say it's been very disappointing in the bigger films that we're coming to expect in the summer season.
Yeah.
You know, I'd just say in that respect, it's a little disappointing.
If we want to go along with, like, the X-rated metaphors here, I'd say that was like the pre-ejaculation where we get the huge load at the end with, you know, we got a Star Wars story, and then I would say Doctor Strange looks interesting, definitely cinematography wise
fantastic.
It's
Beasts and Where to Find Them,
Where to fuck them,
La
La Land, I'm actually kind of looking forward to Damien Chazelle's new movie.
The money shots.
Oh, that's a real movie? La La Land?
La La Land's a real movie.
Okay.
So we're done
with
the
talk.
We're done with 2016. I think August should go next.
What do you guys
I should go next.